everybody, and welcome to Shelfware. I'm Scott, and this week I have my good friend Joe here to talk about a short science fiction novel called Wine Dark Deep by R. Peter Keith, who is not a robot, right? R. Peter Keith. Hello, Joe.
Hello.
Joe is, for those of you in the podcasting world, is also known as Tamahome, who I've done many a podcast with on SFF Audio in years past. Many, many, many episodes.
Those are the days.
Those were the days, for sure, for sure. We talked a lot about, I think your favorite stuff and my favorite stuff talking about on that podcast was the hard science fiction.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I like hard science fiction, and this book is a good example of it.
Yeah, it is for sure. It is for sure.
I think he worked at NASA in mm-hmm. some capacity, so he's knowledgeable about this stuff. He has a YouTube channel with a couple videos on it.
Uh-huh.
And he describes his video as Star Trek if Carl Sagan did it.
It says on Goodreads, it says R. Peter Keith is the creative director of a NASA Space Act Agreement partner company that specializes in the design, fabrication, and exhibition of museum exhibits and interactive experiences. So that's a pretty cool job.
Yeah, and actually, this book was advertised to me on Facebook. And usually, those books, when you go look at reviews, there's like no reviews. But this one had a lot of good reviews. So I was like, okay, I'll give it a try.
That's fantastic. And then you mentioned it to me. And
I know you like hard science fiction.
I do. It was, and I loved it. And I'm going to read the other two. So apparently he dropped all three of these at the same time.
Yeah.
The first one's called Wine Dark Deep. And then the next one is called Encounter at Jupiter. And then the next one is called The Odyssey.
Yeah, I've actually read the second one.
Yes, and you like that one too?
I like it, but it has kind of a different tone to the mm-hmm. first one.
Okay.
The second one is more like they're always on their spaceship and mm-hmm. they have an alien encounter.
Hmm.
Interesting. I got a little antsy with it in the beginning, but by the end it has quite a climax.
Oh, cool. So in the end it was a thumbs up from Tam.
Right.
All right, cool. Very good. Well, so we'll open with, we'll just describe this book without spoilers before we get into a spoilery thing. This book it's about is interplanetary the right word? You know, this is an in the solar system piece of science fiction.
It's on a series and mm-hmm. the biggest asteroid in the asteroid belt.
Right, right. Which is actually, do they call them dwarf planets now? It's actually got a little bit of atmosphere and it's round. I think that they found when they got pictures of it.
I believe so. The gravity on it is very light, so it's mm-hmm. very economical for launching things into space and landing.
Yep, and it's got ice on it. They can actually harvest water.
Right.
Which makes it extremely valuable.
Yeah, air and fuel too.
Right, right. So they can do these things off this, and there are settlements and stuff sort of around the solar system, and this spacecraft called the Ulysses is the main focus of these stories, right? And the Ulysses is what continues on in book two, is that right?
That's right.
Okay, so
same
it's the
captain and crew.
The captain and crew of the Ulysses, then, I guess, is the focus of the whole series. Is called Wine Dark Deep.
Yeah.
And so they're headed on some type of an exploratory mission, and then they need to be refueled. And Ceres normally refuels by launching these tankers into space, and then passing spacecraft can just get resupplied by these tankers, right? But then they show up, and there's no tanker.
Right. They say no.
Right. And then exactly, we're not going
to
do that.
They didn't want them to come to Ceres at all. They said, don't come to us because we won't give you fuel.
Right, right.
But then the captain says, hey, no way. I'm gonna come to your doorstep mm-hmm. and make you give me the fuel. So that's how it starts.
Exactly. And the reason that they're saying no is that the timing of this is really bad for the Ulysses, because the people on Ceres have basically are rebelling against whoever's in charge of them. I don't know if it's Earth or whatever, but they're rebelling against the solar system. They're wanting to be independent. They're declaring independence from the companies that own them, basically.
Yeah, they call them the Mother Consortium in some places.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, that reminds me a little bit of like the moon is a harsh mistress. Right. You know, just this idea that you've got this space colony that wants to declare independence, and yeah, so it gets really it's a politically complicated for the Ulysses. And the Ulysses has a choice. They can either turn around and go home, or they can do what this Captain Calvin Scott did, which is, hey, yeah, just like you said, let's go down there. let's go land on Ceres and find out what the heck. Yeah.
Yeah. For some reason, he says if they had to go all the way home, they might risk getting cancer. Like if they're not firing the fuel all the time, for some reason, the radiation will penetrate the ship more.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Yeah. I don't remember that detail, but yeah, I believe it.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah. I was trying to reread it yesterday and take some notes, and that's one thing I noticed.
Very good. Very good. So that's it in a nutshell. And the other thing I would say to someone who's interested in reading it, it is hard science fiction, which means this author pays an awful lot of attention on detail, how things work, trying to make it accurate. It certainly felt accurate to me. It's just a really, you know, and the systems that they use to launch tankers into space. I mean, all that stuff, just fascinating to me. I just love it a lot. I love a good machine. And
what do you call it? Space mechanics or orbital
mechanics. Yeah.
I like all that stuff.
Oh, me too. I love all that stuff a lot. And it's all in here. So, the author is paying a lot of attention. This is another one that leaps to mind is The Martian, to compare it to, in that, and The Martian was extremely popular too. I have the feeling that Wine Dark Deep is really popular. It's a self-published thing or an independently published thing. Yet I've heard about it around. And then when you said that to me, of course, you know, I wanted to read it. But I've heard it around, so it's being noticed quite a bit, and I think it might just be because there's not a lot of this kind of thing being written today, and when it is written and it's pretty good, I mean, it really sticks out and people really want it. I mean, that's the way it seems to me. Just like The Martian. I mean, The Martian just took off like crazy.
Yeah, I guess it's rare that someone has like the scientific knowledge and can also write decently.
Yeah. Yeah,
but there's no audiobook yet, I guess.
Okay,
maybe that'll come later.
Yeah, that would be cool. They ought to make one. They ought to make one, and it's this is not a long novel. Like I said, I imagine in if it was a paperback, it'd probably be like 170 pages or something.
I think it's 150.
150, okay, which is also throwback. You know, I like it. Yeah. You know, it's like the idea that these are, you know, it'd be kind of a cool marketing thing to print old Del Rey style paperbacks of it. That would be really cool because it belongs in there. But it is
one right side up and one upside down.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, the ace doubles or whatever. That's a great idea too. Yeah, can you do a triple? Is there an ace triple? Because they have three. Because all three of them would fit in a good size paperback.
That's true. Yeah, omnibus.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
So I think Wine Dark Deep is a quote from the Odyssey.
Yeah, that's right. And it's available right at the open, you bet.
And there's some Star Trek comic book with the same name.
Really?
So some people are like, oh, did you take this title from Star Trek? It's like, no, it's from the Odyssey.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Star Trek and it's so many incarnations, you know, I think every title possible has been used.
Yes. And you read the Odyssey, right?
Yeah, I did. I've read it a couple of times and I love it. In fact, I've got that quote here in front of me. The quote is, "And what if some god shall wreck me in the wine dark deep? Even so I will endure, for I have a heart that is inured to suffering. Much have I toiled in perils of waves and war. So let this new disaster come. It only makes one more." And that's from the Odyssey. But that's where the word wine dark deep comes from. Right. It's really descriptive. I mean, you know, he's talking about the ocean there, but, you know, it's like what color space is, you know, it's how can we get more in the darker deep than in space?
Mm-hmm.
Really cool. Just neat.
Yeah. So the ship is named Ulysses, and then the AI is named Odyssey.
Right. Right.
But there's little influences in the book.
I love it. I love it. So yeah. So from here on, we're not going to worry about spoilers or we're, you know, okay. So if you're concerned about spoilers, and this is the time to go ahead and jump off, but we're going to go ahead and talk about some details now.
We're sounding the spoiler horn like
that's right. Exactly. But yeah, so Calvin Scott, I like this structure of it as far as, you know, he's going to be able to write a lot of stories in this, assuming he didn't kill everybody off in book three, which I don't think he would have. But Mission Commander Calvin Scott is he's great, you know, a little Captain Kirkish, it's like he's got hubris, you know, which is like Ulysses in the Odyssey, when you think about it. But he's just like, he had that choice, you know. They could do the safe thing, which was turn around and go home, but you said there was a radiation danger. But instead he said, okay, well, I'm just going to count on these people making the right decision. And I'm going to, because as soon as he turns around and starts to go down to Ceres, that's it. He can no longer leave. It's a decision that's permanent.
They use the fuel to slow down for orbit, and mm-hmm. now they won't have enough fuel to go anywhere else.
Right. So he's like, if we do this, we have to be fueled. Otherwise, we're going to be in orbit forever, you know. Or until it crashes, right?
And they're going to run out of oxygen too.
That's right. Yeah, they've got to have everything, and yeah. And that's one of those things that you think about. You know, you can't carry an infinite amount of those things. You know, which a lot of science fiction just assumes. You know, like the Enterprise, it does have to refuel and stuff. I mean, it does go to space stations and stuff, but that's usually not something that the story's about. It just seems to have an endless supply.
Star Trek.
Yeah.
Hey, we're out of gas.
We're out of gas or we're out of oxygen, right?
Right.
Somehow it's just forever there, and there's gravity on their ship, and it takes them a short time to get places and all that stuff. But I really like this. I love these stories where they're just trying to be accurate. I think that there's a lot of coolness there. But I do like Calvin Scott, and he's like, you know, I don't know how this is going to work out, but I'm going to go in there. And the writer, our Peter Keith, I think he wrote him really well. His characters were distinct, you know. Mm-hmm. I thought he did a good job with characters, is my point. Did you feel
that? Yeah, Hal was interesting, his antagonist on the planet.
Yep.
She was describing him, how he's like trouble and how he is always good in a high pressure situation.
Mm-hmm.
I almost thought of him as like the character from Die Hard.
Yeah, just there you go.
Man against
a
bunch of other people in their environment.
Right. Yeah, and tends to survive things.
Right.
Yeah, that's good stuff. And yeah, Helen Donovan, she actually suggested that they kill him.
Yeah, I mean, like, her morality is, like, totally out the window. She's like, just shoot him down, come on.
Shoot him down, because this isn't going to go well unless he's on our side, she says.
Right.
You know, if he ends up on our side, he's going to be a good guy to have on our side. But if he's not, this is going to be bad. You know, and, so
that was pretty good. She says he likes to knock over apple carts, and now it's going to be her apple cart.
Right. I
love it. She's going to lose billions from her savings.
Uh-huh. You bet. So he, once they get into orbit, he goes down to the planet, because what else are they going to do? The Ceres people, you know, they're not going to have.
Yeah, I guess they sort of steal the taxi thing that's in space, which is owned by Ceres. And
right.
Because they can't afford the fuel to use their own, rover or whatever.
Uh huh.
So they steal Ceres taxi that's already floating in space, and he brings it down.
Yep. Yeah, he brings it down and he lands. And, I mean, it's like, you know, the Ceres folks, this is all happening despite their their wishes, you know, because, you know, but now they're in a spot. So it's like they're having an argument about the politics of the thing. It's like, you know, we're trying to declare independence. We can't bend to the will of this man. You know, so they're not wanting to refuel them or him until independence has been granted.
Yeah, so. I thought this whole setup was kind of fresh. Like, it's more like a business conflict or something, or a political conflict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed.
Instead of just having like a villain where they're constantly shooting at each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This was different.
Yeah, agreed. I liked it too. It seemed like a very plausible thing. And I liked the word fresh. It felt fresh to me. You know, even though I can kind of feel like where it came from. Like I said, I can, Heinlein, you know, he was definitely influenced by the, classic science fiction stuff. You know, we could probably think of even more stories where, you know, it reminds me of some of this stuff, including, like Ben Bova is another one that I was thinking of when I was doing this, who wrote an entire series, called The Grand Tour about, you know, interplanetary space and politics and all that stuff. So, So he passed away.
I guess the more you've read, the more you can find things that are in common with it.
Yeah, for sure. But it's all great. But yeah, it's at the same time, I could use the word fresh as well. I don't feel like it was derivative in a negative way. You know, especially with this stuff that's being published today, this really sticks out, you know, again, like The Martian, as, you know, a throwback, but it's really welcome. Really welcome.
I mean, would this be a good book for a good story is hard to find, because the morality of that series world is like gone. Like, they're all just willing to kill.
Yeah. Yeah.
To achieve their position.
Absolutely. It would be really interesting to talk about it in that way. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Agreed.
I guess, like, I think Cal Scott knew Helen earlier in life.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he thinks she's gotten harder. Like, her attitude has changed since he knew her when she was younger. But the author doesn't really go into detail on what actually happened with her. She's the psychology director of the planet. But it seems like she has a lot of authority.
Kind of like the Deanna Troi, I guess.
Right. Yeah, but meaner.
Right, right. Especially, you know, if you have a psychologist at once, let's just kill this guy. He's going to be bad.
Right. Shoot him down.
Yeah, and he's got that smart ass attitude a little bit where, you know, he's in that interview and they say, we're not going to give you the fuel. And then he's like, okay, well, you probably need my phone then. And he gives him the phone. And even though he's got another one, you know, hidden, but he's like, here's the phone. And, but it all just comes off, you know, he's just redirecting and stuff. Very smart guy.
That was a good scene when he first meets them. I thought that was a good scene.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there's a lot of good little scenes. He's good at dialogue, this author. And then, so they put him in a cell, and then Helen comes to talk to him. And then when she does, he, you know, pops her right in the mouth. Right. And that was good stuff. It was a surprise. And then
can I go a little before that?
Please do, yeah.
I kind of like, I think this is actually like a bathroom, but for some reason they have to have metal pipes because otherwise the material would break.
Oh, yes.
So somehow he takes the antenna from his he has a second cell phone.
Uh-huh.
He's kind of like MacGyver. He takes the antenna from his cell phone and touches it to the metal pipe, and that's how he talks to his ship on second cell phone.
Yeah, so
I like things like that. I like a MacGyver kind of scientifically based action. Yeah,
I love that, and I like I like how he didn't go too far with the technology, and you know, have someone in the bridge or whatever you're going to call it on their station. Or their settlement on the planet.
Or something.
Yeah, they're saying, we're detecting transmission, you know, from somewhere inside the building. You know, he didn't go there, and I thought that was good. You know,
the technology was very like either now or near future.
Right, exactly. So for the most part. Which is fantastic.
Yeah.
I just like that. So, yeah. And that was cool. That was cool. So he's like figuring out how to, yeah, he just connects it to those metal pipes and now he's got an antenna. Full yep. bars, it's it.
I'm on 3G.
Too funny. Yeah, too funny. And yeah, and you think, you know, with these cell phones and stuff. When
he punches her in the face.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love, you know, just the thought that the technology now, I mean, if we were to go into space today, then yeah, we would just have a cell phone tower on the ship, right? And then mm-hmm. that's how we do the communicators and stuff. So, yeah, it's just a cool thought, but I loved it. You know, full bars. This guy's looking for full bars on there. Just funny. But yeah, but once he escapes after getting past Helen, which was also a super good conversation they had before that. Then, you know, he's getting into this is what the station is like, and he's climbing around the station, and there's again, it's all just really logical, and there's all kinds yeah. of technology going on. And
yeah, they have the spinning thing that creates gravity. It's yeah. kind of funny. Like, it's a building on like a planet, but it still has like this spinning, sideways spinning thing so they can create gravity.
Right.
So it's yeah. almost Earth-like gravity. And the ship has that too, where
mm-hmm.
there's like like a habitat or something that spins and that right. creates gravity.
Yeah, yeah.
I really like that gravity kind of stuff where you go towards the middle and there's no gravity, and then you climb up the stairs or the ladder, and then the gravity gets heavier and heavier.
Yeah,
like it's kind of mind-blowing.
Yes, love it, love it. I love yeah. it too. But yeah, I mean, Ceres is such low gravity, and that comes into play here near the end yeah. too. It's just so low gravity. So the way that they launch these tanks into space is not with rockets. It's actually like right. a big long conveyor belt with, I don't know if they were rubber, but wheels, you know, rubber yeah. wheels, some type of wheels.
The accelerator, they call it.
Yeah, the accelerator. So it just, the thing is sitting there on the conveyor and it's zipping along, going faster and faster and faster with these wheels. And then at the end is a ramp and it launches it into the air, or what you would say would be the air, right?
Right.
And it's going fast enough to actually get out there because the gravity is really low. So it's basically just, in other words, it's flinging these up into space. And that's what they've got a little facility cool. here that just, you know, it's like a manufacturing plant that just fills these tanks and then throws them into space. And then
it's very economical, I guess.
Yeah, very. For sure. And that's what they were saying why Ceres is so incredibly important is it would cost a fortune to bring a bucket of water to an asteroid.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and another interesting thing that he said is once you're in space, all points are equal. It just takes longer, right?
That's right.
So it's like, and I thought that was a really, it's an interesting concept. And, but yeah.
You know what I was trying to figure out? Like he says, the higher you are in orbit, the more, I think it's the more fuel you have to use. But if you slow down, you end up lower, but then you're speeding faster over the surface.
Right, right.
Like it's a little mind-bending try to figure that out.
Right, right. Yeah. And then
they have to like point the ship backwards and
mm-hmm.
fire to slow down.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Actually, isn't there a series in The Expanse too?
I've only read the first one.
Okay.
Yeah.
You didn't watch the TV show?
I've only seen a couple episodes. Is it worth watching? Okay. Do you love it?
What?
Do you like that show?
Oh yeah, I've watched the whole thing. I mean, uh-huh. it's kind of dark.
Uh-huh.
Like you might get a little depressed, but mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, it's definitely got a lot of science stuff.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of like shooting and death and stuff. Uh-huh.
Okay.
It's a little dark.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's hard science fiction, definitely.
Uh-huh.
Well, I believe there is a series in The Expanse too.
Okay.
But it's probably different than in this book.
But yeah, I just really loved all the details there, and I know there's probably a lot of readers that wouldn't enjoy that, but I did. But it's all told in an action story while he's running away trying to figure out what to do.
Yeah, so he has to transfer from the rotating thing back to the outside of the building. I thought that part was pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, love it. Love it. Yeah, our hero is in danger, and but manages to get her done. And he's wearing a spacesuit at that point, and he's, you know, which is cool, you know, because it's like all of these life, life systems. What do you call those? Life support systems, right? All these life support systems, just contained in a suit, you know. Which I know that it's not new technology. We have that technology, but as long as he's got that, then he's got all kinds of options on this small, low gravity planet, and mm-hmm. how he figures out how to get into space. that was crazy. So, but he does launch. He manages to figure the machine out, and he launches some tanks into space. But they're really low orbit, and the Ulysses, the people that are left on the Ulysses, have to go get them. And mm-hmm. That was cool.
They have to catch them with a
Which is not normally how they do it, right? But yeah, they had to use their grappling thing to go catch these things.
I think this would be a good movie. Like, I mean, sometimes I would have trouble visualizing everything.
Uh-huh.
So even if it was like an animated movie, I think that would really help understand exactly what's happening.
That's for sure. You know, you say animated, and I wonder, I've often wondered why they haven't tried some of these really great science fiction novels in using animation.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, that opens everything up. It's, do something, you know, like Pixar could do, I don't know, like Ringworld or something like that. You know, how cool would that be?
Did you see Love, Death, and Robots?
Yeah.
It's like a series of short stories.
Yeah. And on, there's a series on, I think it's called Dust. Have you seen any of the ones from Dust on YouTube?
How do you spell that?
Just D-U-S-T, Dust.
With a D. No.
Yeah. There's a whole bunch of science fiction shorts on YouTube, and they're really good. They're high quality and good.
Oh, it's on YouTube?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Just called Dust.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll check it out.
Yeah. Yeah. There's not a lot of hard science fiction. I mean, of the type, you know, where they're running around in space and stuff, but they're really good, high quality stories. The ones that I've seen about three or four of them. Oh. And there seems to be a lot of them. So, yeah, it's really good. Then, you know, once he gets those tankers launched, then he has to figure out how to get away himself. And, it's just really cool what he does. And, of course, dangerous. And, I was there the whole time. I actually, you know, nowadays I didn't assume that he would survive that thing when I was reading it, which is good, you know, it's a good thing to wonder. That's part of it was, I'm not sure he's going to make that, but you know, in the hands of George R. R. Martin, maybe he wouldn't have made it.
Right.
So, wow.
They have these rovers, and they have, I guess they have rockets on the top to keep from flying off.
Yeah. The surface. And that's an interesting thing too. Yeah. They've got to hold it down. Right. So if it hits a bump, it's going to fly up, you know, and maybe twist in the air and land wrong, but instead they have these little jets on the top that'll
hold it to the ground. Conspicuous use of fuel, but
yeah.
Since they're rich and have so much fuel, they can do that.
Right. Yeah.
So that's what he kind of uses that to, so I guess he jumps off a ramp with one of those rovers.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But then he ejects like the back half of it to mm-hmm. Have a lighter weight.
Yeah.
And that's how he launches, like, into space, and then somehow the ship can retrieve him.
Right.
Does the ship actually grab him with the arm?
He ends up either near or holding on to a tank.
Oh, okay.
One of the tanks, yeah. So, but they are flying past him super fast. It's like you know, it was one of those things. Well, you know, in that way, it's not unlike The Martian again, at least the movie one, the movie.
Right.
Where, you know, they're passing each other so quickly that there's a good chance that it's not going to work. But they do end up getting him.
Maybe those two authors can team up.
Yeah, for sure. No, I think it's great. Both of them. Yeah. I haven't read anything past as far as The Martian goes. Have you read any of his novels after that? Doesn't he have two or is it just one so far?
Yeah, he definitely has a second one. I think it's a girl like on the moon.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some kind of mystery on the moon or something like that.
Right. I mean, yeah. I think it's reviewed not as well as The Martian, mm-hmm. but yeah, I'm curious about it. I'm sure it has a lot of science-y elements.
Oh, I'm sure it does. Yeah. 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 I'm interested too. So, and I think I've seen that he's coming out with another one.
Oh, okay.
So, but yeah, and I don't know. So as far as this one goes, R. Peter Keith, so you said in the second book, is it like directly after this? Is this them continuing their mission as planned?
Yeah, they're on their way to Jupiter, but then they encounter like a comet or something, and it turns out to have an alien presence.
Very interesting.
It's very different. It's not like one guy as like a diehard character. It's more like the whole crew on the ship dealing with like an alien. The alien kind of like invades the ship, and there's these little tendrils that grow in the ship, and they kind of deal with that.
Okay.
And actually, I was a little like restless with it, but then by the end something really spectacular happens.
That's cool.
And it is slightly longer. I think it's more like at least 200 pages.
Uh-huh. Oh, very nice.
I think for some reason the second and third books get longer and longer.
Well, good for me. He's figuring it out.
I love it.
So I found a little interview of the author on a site called Gene Book Nerd, and he says, you know, I'll just read his description, but he says, book one introduces Calvin Cal Scott, the captain of the interplanetary spaceship Ulysses and its crew who are on the scientific mission of a lifetime. The Ulysses and ships like it are dependent on the launch of refueling tankers sent into space well in advance from the moon or the giant asteroid Ceres. When their promised refueling from Ceres doesn't arrive, the Ulysses is advised to tuck its tail between its legs and limp home. But that's not in Cal's makeup. Instead, he uses the last of their fuel to put them on course for Ceres and find out what happened. He plans to show up in Ceres' sky and make trouble. And then it says, the second book, Wine Dark Deep Encounter at Jupiter, takes that very grounded world and shakes it. We get to see what these characters and their vessel are really made of. And we get our first taste of not only the unknown, but the possibility of the unknowable. And then it says, here's his description of the third book. In the third book, which is called Wine Dark Deep, The Odyssey, things really start to get weird. And that's his whole description. And then it says, and the fourth book, which I'm halfway through right now. Oh. Well, and he says, I tried to amp each book up over the previous one. So, and that's all he answered.
Oh.
So, very good.
In the third book, they end up in a different solar system.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe so. Yeah. That's cool. That's cool. So yeah, yeah. But I did love this book a lot. Definitely going to continue.
In the second book, they end up on Jupiter, and there's a lot of like visuals of Jupiter. And
nice.
I mean, that's something I would like to see, like as a movie or something.
That's something that I really liked about Ben Bova. But I had, you know, I thought that his stories weren't terrific. You know, some of them were. And I haven't read all of his books, but I really liked the accurate details. I felt like I learned something when I read his stuff. And I think the same is true of this author. And I think he may be a good storyteller, too.
Yeah.
Which is great to have all in one. Yeah. So,
yeah. Sometimes I wish you can click on a link and have an extra explanation in case you don't understand something.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. And why can't you?
Or just the drawing.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So great. So have you been reading anything else? Has anything else leapt out to you in the past 6 months or so in the science fiction world?
I started The Black Cloud.
The Black Cloud. Is that an
old?
That's
an old.
Yeah, is that like Fred Hoyle?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. I haven't come across that book in forever. So, what do you think of it?
Actually, I didn't finish. Like, the beginning is really cool. A black cloud is coming towards Earth, and they use, like, trigonometry or something on a board to figure out how fast it's coming and what its mass is and everything.
Uh-huh.
I really like that. But then in the middle, it gets, like, more political. Like, this one scientist moves into a house and kind of, like, messes with the government and stuff. So I kind of stopped myself there, but I should go back and finish it off
because interesting.
I want to know what happens with the black cloud.
Heck yeah, that's an oldie, yeah, but a goodie.
That's definitely.
I don't know if it's a goodie actually. I don't know if that I ever read it. I remember that book being in my house when I was growing up. My brother must have picked it up or something. I just remember the cover. I don't remember ever reading it though.
Actually, the politics. It's kind of interesting. It's like he says, like the smart people are on the bottom. So somehow the scientist puts himself on the top instead.
Uh-huh.
So that the smart people are in control. I feel like maybe these days we need some of that the smart people need to take over.
So much.
yeah.
I think it was Christopher Hitchens who said that he was actually shocked when he first started getting into reporting and stuff at the level of our leadership. And this was, you know, years and years ago. He was just stunned by the people that were able to get, you know, put in charge and their their level of intelligence is what he said. he was worried about it a long time ago.
I guess it's always been that way.
Yeah, probably has. It's like, you know, it's the skill set that you need to get in charge is a different skill set than you need to govern. Right.
Right. I mean, they're good at speech making, but maybe not at problem solving or something.
Right. Right. Yeah. Because we got a lot of those.
Yeah.
It's wild. That's wild. But yeah, I just got in fact, they're sitting right here. I just got a little stack of Robert A. Heinlein in. I bought just off of eBay, just a small stack here.
Wow.
Yeah, so what I've got here is...
Haven't you read them all?
So some of them, yeah. So The Green Hills of Earth. Yeah. So I've read that one, but I love it. And then The Man Who Sold the Moon.
Okay.
And Double Star, which is one that I've read too. That's kind of a... what do you call it? Almost like a Jack Finney Invasion of the Body Snatchers kind of. And then this one I've never read, Revolt in 2100.
Oh.
And then The Menace from Earth. This is a short story collection. And then Beyond This Horizon. And I'm not sure on this one. I might have, but I don't know. But anyway, I just saw it on eBay and grabbed it. But nice little set of the same style. So
I did read Peter F. Hamilton's Salvation Trilogy.
Yeah. What did you think?
That was good. I mean, and those books are half as long as his books usually are.
Mm-hmm. Which is still long.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
But not as long. I mean, and the third book, it really, the science really goes into like the extreme.
That's cool. I really like Peter Hamilton, and I haven't read those, but I need to.
Yeah, they're brand new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. Love it. Well, great. Are you able to get into your bookstore? I know there's one that you go to often.
I have a Barnes & Noble right in my town.
Well, that's great. Mm-hmm.
I can sit at a table with a coffee and take my mask off if I want.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's great. Very good. Good. Yeah. It's great news. Mm-hmm. Well, it's great to talk to you, Tam. And I do miss you on the podcast trail, so this was a real treat for me.
Yeah, me too. It's been a long time.
It has been. But yeah, enjoy it a lot. All right, well, thanks everybody for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.